Experience the difference. A federalnewsradio.com. Federal Drive host, Tom Temin.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission reaches 50 years in operation. More women and minorities than ever are working in the upper echelons of government and industry. But Chairwoman Jenny Yang tells me the EEOC still has lots of work ahead. It will concentrate on unequal pay and subtle discrimination. For more, search Temin.
Experience the difference. Tom Temin on federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome to the Intelligence and National Security Summit discussion on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guests today are Terry Roberts, founder and president of CyberSync Incorporated, and Sean Henry, the chief security officer and president of CrowdStrike Services. Both are leading the cyber track for the Intelligence and National Security Summit being held on September 9th and 10th in Washington, D.C., co-hosted by FCIA and INSA. Terry, Sean, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Wonderful to be here.
So we're going to talk a lot about cyber, but and specifically about the cyber track that you guys are hosting at the summit. But I got to start with the bigger question about cybersecurity, the OPM breach. It's all we've been talking about, it feels like, for the month of June. Give me a sense, you know, from just this breach seems to insinuate, oh, the government cybersecurity is awful. It doesn't work. Nobody does their job well. But do you get a sense, and let me start with Sean from your experience with the FBI. The government's better than it was 3 years ago. It's better than it was 5 years ago. Do you get that sense, or are they worse off because of the way the adversaries are so much stronger?
I actually don't get the sense that we're better off. I think that there's been some fallback in the last few years for a variety of reasons. First of all, the adversaries have absolutely gotten better. The most sophisticated adversaries have capabilities that allow them to get into environments, into networks, with relative ease, it seems, and they're able to remain there undetected for long periods of time. Seven years ago, or eight years ago, the U.S. government had a comprehensive national cybersecurity initiative that not only had been signed off by the president, but all of the cabinet officials in the executive branch, and was funded by Congress. So you had the executive branch and the legislative branch coming together with a comprehensive strategy and plan. Fast forward 8 years later, we see an OPM breach where it appears that relatively benign or easy to correct capabilities were defeated. And some of what I've seen in the media and what I've heard with folks that I've talked to who are in a position to know, that was not necessarily a very difficult attack overall. So I guess when I look at long-term, where's the government going? Where are we headed? What's the sense of urgency? How are we going to defend these networks? It's not like we haven't known about this. We have. It's not like we haven't funded it. We have. Are we executing the strategy that has been put in place for many years? Can we make changes to the strategy if they're necessary? That's fine, too.
Terry, Sean seems like things are dire. I mean, he's just the way I feel depressed by what he said a little bit. 8 years ago, yeah. Now, but let's add some of your thoughts on it. Do you get the same feeling as Sean? Do you agree with him?
So I was actually part of the Comprehensive National Cyber Initiative in 2008, 2009, and I think a lot of great work was put in place then.
Agreed.
And I do think that there is progress being made, but it's not across all of government. So I think we have pockets of excellence, and we're not able to take advantage of that excellence consistently in support of all government organizations and entities. I think one of the key pieces that is missing is there isn't a cyber baseline for every government organization. And so what's a cyber baseline? It really is, what do you have in place today from your IT architectures and your software? What are the things you need to protect the most? What are the jewels of your particular mission set that should be protected first? Okay. And then a plan, right, that's tailored to your organization for what you need to focus on. And so instead, I think we've been reactive to what is the latest threat vector. And then we put new technologies in place, and sometimes it takes literally years to put those in place. And in the meantime, something as critical to the United States as the OPM personnel database, was really left unguarded.
And I agree with everything Terry said, but that's really the crux of my concern, is that 8 years after there was a plan and it was funded, it's not been executed broadly across the government. Mm-hmm. And that is that's not acceptable, because I think the stakes are too high. Our economic and national security is tied to this risk, and our failure to address this risk is going to mean dire consequences for the United States.
So to circle back one last time, Jason, then what we're saying is there was a plan, there has been some improvement, but you know, if you're not successful against some of the jewels of the U.S. government in protecting those, then we're failing.
I've talked to several CIOs post-OPM breach and asked them about, what does this mean for you in terms of, do you take another harder look at it? And one discussion I had with Richard McKinney, the Transportation Department CIO, he brought up the fact that they're doing exactly what you said, was go back and look at their high-value data assets. How are they protecting them? And are they, what do they need to do more? And I guess the question goes back to, shouldn't you have been doing that all along? And if you haven't, why? So where did they fall down during the last 8 years? Because I think, Sean, to play a little devil's advocate with you, if you talk to someone in the White House, they'll tell you, no, we didn't give up on the CNCI. We didn't think that, you know, the president's priority goals are all part of the CNCI, two-factor authentication, the TIC. And then they also added the CDM piece, the continuous monitoring piece. So they would tell you, we don't think we didn't have a plan. We've been following the plan.
Well, there was no continuous monitoring at OPM, so that wasn't being done. That there are certain things that were in the president's plan that have not been broadly executed, which comes back down to that that piece. I think you've got a plan, you've got a strategy, it's funded, can you execute it? And the biggest thing for me is that it's been so many years, and what I see as some basic necessary steps have not yet been taken. Let me say this, because I think it's important. I've worked with many incredibly patriotic individuals inside the government who have made many personal sacrifices and continue to do so to keep this country safe day in and day out. And I know that they are trying to do their jobs. I think that a lot of this comes down to process, policy, and strategy, and not a full sense of urgency across the government writ large.
Terry, do you get a sense that that urgency piece, this OPM breach, is going to create that urgency now more than ever? Because as Sean was saying, it's not that they don't work hard. It's not that they don't understand the problem. I mean, listen, you had JP Morgan Chase, you had Target, you had the healthcare breaches. If that's not a wake-up call, then whatever will be.
I think it's because we, the royal we, are trying to do everything. And I think what, you know, a very simple analogy between Sony and OPM is, you know, what was of the greatest criticality to Sony was unreleased movies, right? That was their revenue stream. What was of greatest value to OPM was the U.S. government personnel database with all of their detailed personal background and contacts, okay? So maybe they couldn't do everything across the board from a cybersecurity, continuous monitoring, cyber intelligence, da-da-da-da plan, but they could have made it that the majority of that personnel data, which you were not using on a day-in, day-out basis, could have been encrypted to a very high level, associated with a number, and then use that front-end data in the day-in, day-out dealings and keep the mass amount of data and only access that maybe a couple of times a year according to your business processes.
Let me add one other thing, if I can, Jason, which is a really important piece, because Terry brought up Target and some other commercial breaches. There's one big difference between the government and the commercial sector. In the commercial sector, the private sector has the responsibility to protect its data, and they are not charged with, and nor can they, because it would be illegal, to take any type of offensive actions. The government, on the other hand, has the fundamental responsibility to protect its citizens. In addition to defending its networks, it needs to protect its citizens. And as part of that comprehensive national cybersecurity initiative, there was an entire process in place about how you define for the adversaries what the red lines are and what the repercussions are if they cross those red lines. So when you asked a little earlier about, you know, the government and it's been 3 years or 5 years, one of the pieces that's missing is, I think, it's not just about defending. What policies and strategies is the USG employing to help deter our adversaries? Because at the end of the day, there's a human being at the end of that box. And we have to take certain actions, much like we do in the physical world, in the criminal world. People are arrested and they're taken to jail. There are deterrent actions that are taken in the national security space, in cyber world. How do we do that? And what are the policies we're enacting and the strategies we're employing to ensure that occurs?
When you look across what's been going on, Sean, you very eloquently said they're just not doing some of the basics. If you were in charge, if you could wave the magic wand, what would you do first? What needs to be done first? I know every agency is different, so you can't just say everyone needs to do two-factor authentication as an example. But
so here's if I could only choose one thing to do,
or many things, you could give a list.
Well, I could give you a list. We'd be sitting here. This is only a 28-minute show. The first thing is leadership. And when I say leadership, I don't want to make it a political statement. There needs to be, in my opinion, a human being who is responsible across all government agencies to get this executed. I think the so-called cyber czar, and I've known the last two, both great men, Howard Schmidt and Michael Daniel, great guys who understand this space. But I don't know that they've got the authority to actually execute across government agencies. And I think that is the key piece here. There needs to be a leadership response. On the heels of OPM, on the heels of other major breaches that I've personally been involved in, there's always the question who's in charge. And while there are people that are willing to step up, I think it needs to be muscle memory, and we need to just immediately respond and be proactive in those cases. And we can't be scrambling to determine who's in charge. I think that happens too often. So having a human being, a leader across all government agencies who's responsible for this threat and this tremendous risk is key.
And Terry, from your perspective, is it a training thing? Because a lot of people talk about that this was an espionage breach. And really what's going to happen is targeted phishing attacks to try to get back into government networks to steal specific things. So, and then the average federal employee, you know, will click on something because they got a birthday message from Terry. Oh, I know Terry. Terry must know my birthday. And then, boom, they're in the network. Is training the next big thing after leadership, or would you point to something else?
I would include training within the compendium of what has to be done, but sort of following off on what Sean was saying on leadership, it's also providing those leaders with the authority, the resources, and the accountability and responsibility to be able to execute those. So one of the discussions there has been for a long time is, can CIOs truly be CIOs and have under them the policy, the resources within their organizations? But then what is the interagency wide or enterprise-wide approach? So for instance, why is OPM sort of out on its own? And I don't know for a fact whether or not, but why not have an NSA red team, you know, run the exercise against them to pull out those holes in or vulnerabilities in their defenses? Why not have the FBI in core areas where they're the best and lead as the executive agent for those lines of responsibility across all of government? But I mean, well laid out so that you're truly working as a team, and the have-not agencies then benefit from the have agencies in those core areas where we're doing really well, but then it's not, you know, consistently executed across all government entities.
My guests today are Terry Roberts, founder and president of CyberSync Incorporated, and Sean Henry, the chief security officer and president of CrowdStrike Services. Both are leading the cyber track for the Intelligence and National Security Summit, being held on September 9th and 10th in Washington, D.C., co-hosted by FCIA and INSA. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Terry, let me turn to you first. The summit's coming. It's a few months out. But give me a sense. What's the goal? What's the theme of the summit? And let's talk more specifically about the cyber track. What kind of discussions do you want to initiate?
Well, this is the second year that FCIA and INSA have partnered together on their fall summits. And what I love about this particular forum is that first, it's unclassified. So we're talking about the really big national security issues. We have the leadership from across government, industry, and academia. And we're all doing it in an open forum at the DC Convention Center. So it's the kind of thing that students can come to and everyone can come to and really see the U.S. leadership speaking. The tracks focus on policy, top policy issues, technology issues. And of course, the most important track is the cyber track, which Sean and I are leading, which has three separate panels. So each track has three separate panels. And then you have the plenary sessions where we literally have, you know, the directors of the agencies and heads of departments speaking to you directly.
So, Terry, when you look at the agenda, and we're not going to spend too much time on this, but who are you excited about? Is there anyone, one or two people or any one or two track sessions that you're most excited about?
Well, we have, within the plenary sessions, we have the leadership from across the intelligence community. So each of the agency heads speaking, many of whom also spoke last year, but they don't speak in broad open forums very often. So it's a nice rare opportunity. And of course, the Director of National Intelligence, Jim Clapper.
Who always seems to make a little bit of news when he goes out and speaks. So it's always he's always worthwhile to listen to at the very least.
He is a truth to power guy.
So Sean, the session that you're handling under the cyber track is about hunting, detecting, responding to the bad guys on your network. Seems pretty timely given the OPM breach in our previous discussion. Just give me a sense of what the goals are for that track.
Yeah, I think it really is to alert people to the changing dynamics of information security. For two decades, the mantra in InfoSec has been about defense in depth and making sure you've got a firewall and dual factor authentication and an intrusion detection system, which is still important. But the most capable adversaries are going to get onto the network, and it's not just about prevention anymore. It really is about moving to detection and response. When I was running the Bureau's cyber investigation program, agents around this country would go out dozens of times a week and knock on the doors of major companies and tell them that they've been breached. That's still happening today. In most of those cases, the adversaries had been on that network for weeks or months, completely undetected. If you allow an adversary on your network for weeks or months, bad things are going to happen. So this track is really about getting people to understand that there's new tools that the adversaries are bringing into the environment that you cannot readily scan for, and that you've got to be doing continuous monitoring to identify specific tripwires that will alert you that you've got to respond. So it's really a new philosophy. It's really, really critical, and we've got some great speakers there.
Heard a funny quote that has been repeated many times over the last few months, but there's, you know, two kinds of people, those who've been hacked and know it and those who've been hacked and don't know it. I think that's a common refrain. Terry, when we talk about this idea of moving past just defense in depth and prevention, but really detection and response, that's part of the solution, I think, that we talked about at the last segment about if you could do something. Talk a little bit about what you're seeing from that perspective around not just the moving beyond the defense in depth approach.
Well, I think it involves partnerships. And so different kinds of partnerships across government and with government and industry. So one of the areas that I've been focused on for a long time has been on the information sharing front, but how do you scale that? So how do you turn that into cyber intelligence, which means that it's actionable information? And how do you do that broadly? And I think the information sharing executive order that recently came out offers some interesting opportunities. But frankly, we've been talking about for a long time about having a third party entity that could be a nonprofit interlocutor between government and industry on sharing cyber information and intelligence. And I can't understand why over the past decade it still hasn't been established. So that's an initiative that I would really love to see come together.
And in fact, the other piece of this goes back to the one of the other tracks around cyber intelligence certification. Sean, just broadly speaking, cyber intelligence, that seems to be a bit of a buzzword in the cyber world. Is this track specifically looking at certification piece, but talk a little bit about cyber intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, for me, intelligence is the key factor in any type of national security or criminal environment for actors in that space. It's about being able to peer around the corner and see what's coming. And it's what we've done in the physical world, in terrorism, for example, for the last 15 years. It's about collecting information about our adversaries so we understand what tools they're bringing to the game, what their capabilities are, what is the key information they're looking for, how do they move throughout the environment, how do they communicate outside of the network. So looking for those types of things, collecting that intelligence, tactical intelligence. This is not information sharing. I think it's really important to specify it's about tactical intelligence. And how do we disrupt the adversaries because we're able to identify the actions that they're taking? So all of that, going back to that the last track we talked about on the continuous monitoring, it all starts with intelligence and getting that visibility into who the adversaries are.
Terry, one piece about this track is the certification piece. Mm-hmm. I know your company is focused, I think, on training. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about what's that mean about cyber intelligence certification, because there's a certification for certifiers, I think, too.
So it was very exciting at RSA this year to see that cyber intelligence was really out in the forefront everywhere and that cyber intelligence companies, teams are being established throughout industry. But what we don't have yet is a consistent framework for how to train and educate folks in the cyber intelligence arena. So we're actually running an initiative within the INSA Cyber Council using academicians and practitioners, cybersecurity practitioners, to establish a cyber intelligence certification framework that everyone could leverage. So colleges and universities, high schools, certification programs, so that we in the U.S. could be thought leaders in this space and grow and create a lot of professionals with this background and expertise.
Sean, how much is this needed? I mean, is this a learned skill or is this something you got to do by doing?
You know, I think it's both. I think you've got to develop that baseline. You've got to understand. I think Terry's point is right on. There's got to be some consistency, some continuity, and some clear frameworks. And then, like anything else, once you come in at that kind of entry level, it really takes time and effort, and it's a learning process. You learn from people that go before you. You learn by collaborating with others and other organizations. So that really is where you define and create the high-level capabilities you need, which is that experience.
There's a big push around cyber intelligence from the government. I've talked to the Energy Department, Chief Information Security Officer. I think some of the other agencies are really looking at this idea of cyber intelligence. And then, of course, the executive order around the CTIC, I think that's what they're calling it, cyber intelligence information something or other.
The National Center.
Yes, thank you.
National Cyber Intelligence Center.
Yes. That is the push because they're realizing just the value of it and it's been taking so long, or is there something else going on? Do either of you get a sense on that? Why all of a sudden this recognition of the importance of cyber intelligence?
You know, the way I define it is it's everything that's going on outside your network. So it's sort of like your neighborhood watch. If you know what's going on, then you truly can take action to prevent a crime, okay? And so if we can do this across government and industry, it takes us to that next level of capability, insight, and understanding and our ability to take action to prevent.
Let's move on. There's one more track, the Unclassified Global Threat Assessment. Sounds really daunting because it's unclassified and it's global. Do you guys get a sense of what the goals are for that one as well?
Yes. So this was actually something that the National Intelligence Officer for Cyber, Sean Canuck, who wrote this year's Cyber Threat Global Threat Assessment, but which, by the way, was the first piece in the DNI's threat assessment. And within that context, he wanted to be able to bring out an unclassified version of that, have a discussion, and also focus on an area that Sean spoke to earlier, which is how do we begin to put a deterrence framework in place? And so it's kind of cool. It's going to discuss both what is their assessment of foreign threat actors and vectors and start a discussion of how do we talk about how we can deter foreign actors in this space?
Sean, is when we hear the word foreign threat actors, first thing you think of is nation states. But that's not is that the biggest concern for the government right now in industry, or is it more the organized crime element?
There are multiple foreign threat actors. Nation states, certainly, we've all heard about China, Russia, Iran as probably the primary three. But beyond that, these Russian organized crime groups that are targeting primarily the financial services sector. But I'd add in terrorist groups, actually, that are sympathetic to the jihadi cause. And when I talk about terrorist groups, I don't mean terrorist in a theoretical term. I mean groups that are associated with al-Qaeda, ISIS, and others who are looking to develop these capabilities. They clearly have the intent. They want to disrupt the U.S. and Western society through electronic attack. They're calling for electronic jihad and establishing an electronic caliphate. They recognize that our critical infrastructure, power, energy, transportation, communications, the financial services sector, that our economic and national security rides on those rails. And if they're able to disrupt them, they will have the same impact on this country as they did by flying planes into buildings.
Listening to Sean, I get a little depressed sometimes. And I mean that in the most respectful way. You know, I know the sky's not always falling, but what should people want to take away from these three sessions? They all sound very interesting, very exciting. I mean, just the way, Sean, you described the global threat assessment, I think that's like when we all should be at to understand what's really happening. Give me a sense of the what should people walk away with this from the tracks?
So what's great about each of the tracks is that we're not just talking about the issue, we're talking about solutions. So in Sean's track on hunting, it's about how do you get to that next level of proficiency, right? So that you detect what's going on that's abnormal in your networks and you are tracking what's going on and you are getting them at a point in time before major damage occurs, okay? And in cyber intelligence, it's again about getting ahead, training the folks, establishing digital literacy across our workforce. And then with the last one, it's yes, we need to know what's going on, but hey, we can also put in place an international framework of deterrence. Let's take charge. Let's take action.
My guests are Terry Roberts, founder and president of CyberSync Incorporated, and Sean Henry, the chief security officer and president of CrowdStrike Services. Both are leading the cyber track for the Intelligence and National Security Summit being held September 9th and 10th in Washington, D.C., co-hosted by FCIA and INSA. For more information on the Intelligence and National Security Summit, visit intelsummit.org. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You've been listening to the Intelligence and National Security Summit discussion on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.